This is Yvonne Brown, and this is a JADcast, produced by JAD Communications International, the organization that helps women stop limiting beliefs and achieve their highest potential at www.jadcommunications.com. Welcome.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's JADcast. Today we have playwright Lydia R. Diamond, Whose The Gift Horse premiered at the Goodman Theater and is anthologized in 7 black plays from Northwestern University Press. Voyeurs de Venus, which I've seen recently, it's very good, everybody, and Miss Diamond's adaptation of Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eyes were both commissioned by Steppenwolf Theater. Miss Diamond is the recent winner, resident winner, of the Theater Award Prize, recipient of an Illinois Arts Council Fellowship, and a contributing editor at Tri-Quarterly. Currently, she resides in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where she's a non-resident Harvard Dubois Center Fellow and has recently been named one of 4 commissioned playwright fellows at the Huntington Theater, a 2-year residency. Welcome, Lydia.
Thank you very much.
How did you become a playwright? Was that a dream realized, or did it come about later?
It sort of came about later. I was a theater major at Northwestern, undergrad, and was focusing on acting, and there was sort of a dearth of roles for young black women at the time, or really, period. And I started writing things for myself. I just wanted to be able to do that, and somehow, because the way we get socialized in theater is sort of thinking of playwrights, and I don't know if this is true for this next generation, but when I was in school, it really felt as though playwrights were dead people. And so it didn't occur to me even at that point to think of myself as a playwright or to think of as a viable career. But I found that I had a knack for it and enjoyed it, and so over the course of 11 years, I sort of acted professionally and wrote plays and sometimes acted in them. I had my own theater company, and then I started another theater company with some friends, and somehow along the way I got the message that I was meant to be writing plays, at least at this stage in my life and in my career. And so that's sort of how I came to be a playwright.
You know, I'm glad to hear that, because it lets people know that you can change as you get little signals along the way, because JAD Communications, we help women on the journey to achievement of their destiny. And to me, that is exactly sort of what you've done. You're on the way to your destiny, and your achievements are piling up along the way as you move in that direction. How do you select your topics?
You know, they come to me rather organically. I sort of live in a kind of heightened place around things like race relations and sexism and social inequality, economic inequality. All of those things are just part of my consciousness, not because I'm particularly a person who would define herself as a political person, but because I kind of live my politic. And so those awarenesses work their way into my stories and into my plays, and there's always an element, perhaps, on the fringes of autobiography. And and the characters are born out of all of those sensibilities. And then out of the characters usually come the plots, come the plays.
I'm really glad to hear that. And one of the things you said at Saturday's play, which was Stickfly, was that sometimes when you're writing, you're actually dealing with something personal that at the end of the process you've reconciled this issue.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Stickfly is another play of mine that's running currently at Congo Square Theater, and that also closes April 15th. We just got a great review in the Tribune on that today. We're thrilled.
You mentioned, because on Saturday when I was at Stickfly, you actually stuck around, which was fabulous, and spoke to the audience a little bit and took our questions and said, sometimes it's something you're dealing with personally that you know.
Yes, and so the reason I started writing Stickfly actually was because I was working on this harrowing piece and doing this research that was so depressing on my other play, Voyeur de Venus, and Stickfly sort of became my escape, and even though it explores issues that are serious to me and important, it's also there's so much laughter in the play. And so, sort of, I think very much I'm informed by things that are happening around the edges of my life, yes.
And I was going to say that it informed me, because part of why I am so excited about your two plays that I've seen is that the character in each play actually gets to the point where she's dealing with an issue where she just comes out of her bag, is how I like to put it, where she just... It's not as though she really tells the person off, but it's like she has something to get off her chest. And it's sometimes, because I too am a woman of color, I've dealt with issues that I kind of carry around with me like little post-it notes that are still unresolved, you know? And sometimes
that's a beautiful image.
I feel as though I could just say some of those words, but of course you can't. However, in a play, you can't.
Yeah, that's what's nice. It's true. A play gives us a chance to voice things that we would never say or do in social situations, at least not if we want entree into those social situations again.
Exactly.
But, yeah, it's true. One of the things I was exploring in Stick Fly was sort of my sense of how racism and classism and the various things that we have to navigate can invade even our most personal spaces. And it's a combination of looking at those power dynamics. It's all about power dynamics. And also the searching for fathers that across races we all do, this sort of, you know, if you have a father in your home, what does that relationship mean? And for so many people, it's a difficult one, and for people for whom it's not, it's a special one. And so this play was largely about an exploration of father-daughter relationships and with all of the encumbrances of the other social things that are heaped upon our shoulders as African-American people in this country.
You know, one of the things also that I found fascinating was at Stick Fly, the play Stick Fly, is how you said you came up with that title and that whole
concept.
Would you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, certainly. I was driving down Lakeshore Drive and I was listening to NPR, and there was a piece about an entomologist or about how movements of flies are studied, and it was such a beautiful sort of metaphor for something that I knew was a little bit intangible but so attractive to me, and it became the monologue around which kind of the play was built. I can't go too much into it because then I'll give it away, but there's something about the way fly movement is studied by entomologists that resonates for the protagonist, or one of the characters at least, in the play Stick Fly, who is an entomologist, and in her journey that really has some significance for her.
How do you select your topics? Because it's so much different from Voyeurs de Venus. That how do you select your topics? Do they just come to you, or does it kind of germinate in your mind for a while and then pop out, or...
Yeah, it sort of does. It's sort of both of those things. It's really a terribly organic process, and I don't know that any artist can really put their finger on it. I think about that. I don't know that a painter says, I think I'm going to work with these colors now. I think that the colors come to the painter, the palette comes to the painter, the subject comes to the painter, and then you know that you're exploring a certain something because it's in this time in your life when you're exploring these things. And for me, the subjects of my plays are the same. They get born out of things that I'm struggling with, but the process is so not tangible. It's so in other spaces in my psyche and spiritual sort of places and intangible kinds of places that...
Do you lock yourself up and just sort of sit there in front of the typewriter and
No, quite the opposite. I'm terribly unfocused. And I think that's okay. I think I'm fully living my life, and as I'm living it, pieces of it are informing what might happen next creatively. And then I have this idea, and I say, oh, this is where I'm going next. And it becomes more and more specific in my mind. And then, you know, maybe over the period of 6 months, often a year or more, I then have done most of the writing in my head, nothing on paper yet. And so then when I'm ready to sit down and write the play, it comes out pretty quickly.
Fascinating.
Kind of fully developed. And then I do a lot of the kind of work that all playwrights do, around structure and fine-tuning and dialogue and dramaturgical accuracy and all of those things.
So do you really do it alone? I mean, all by yourself, and then you bring it, you find the actors and you bring them in and so on, or?
Yes. It's the first part of the process is the one that's lonely and by yourself and solitary. And then theater becomes this community, which is the part that I most like about it. And so, you know, the time you spend alone is rewarded by being surrounded by these brilliant other artists who bring so much dimension to the piece, and then their work informs your ability to shape where the piece needs to go.
In
what's called development processes, where something in theater that we're always trying to get more money for, you have an opportunity to have actors read your work, and then when you hear it, you know what it's doing. And then, you know, if you get to have a stage reading and have and see how it interacts with an audience, then that's more work that you can do on it. And then when you get to have a production, in previews you see how it interacts with an audience, and that's more tinkering that you can do. And then even post a premiere, you can know sort of what audiences felt and how it was received, and if need be, if you feel like there's more work to be done, there's even room to do more work. It's a living art that it continually changes until it's done and you move on to the next thing.
I've heard that there are very few women playwrights. Is that true?
I don't know. I think that like so many things in this country, there are so many things upon which being able to be an artist, it's so many external pressures that makes it difficult for family pressures and financial pressures and things like that to allow us to be career anything, but particularly writers, artists. And so for those reasons, I think probably it's harder for women, you know, in just a very practical way. I think that there's some probably archaic attitudinal reasons for why female artists are not supported as much as they should be financially and in every other respect. I mean, just possibly not even given the respect that we're due. That said, I've certainly had lots of opportunities and have been very grateful for them. And so there are opportunities to be had, but I think the playing field remains uneven. I think that the people who have the ability to disseminate power often happen to be men, often happen to be white men, and so the power gets disseminated accordingly, and not by necessarily some huge racist master plan, but just because that's the way opportunities trickle down. You afford the people who are like you and in the spaces that you inhabit the opportunities, and so I just to even try to speak to the social dynamics of what makes a whole group, a whole career not accessible to somebody is beyond me. I'll let my husband, who's a sociologist, try to break that down for us. But yes, there are. When I'm with other playwrights, it seems to me that there are fewer female playwrights, and I think sometimes the perception is, I think if you fall into starting to perceive that is not true, that somehow women are getting more opportunities, you must stop and think about the shows that are currently on Broadway, the people who have won Pulitzer Prizes, and actually sort of start to break down who's a man and who's a woman and who's white and who's black, and generally you'll see the way it falls out.
Yeah. You know, lots of us, thank you for that thoughtful response.
I hope that wasn't all cogent.
So many of us have this great idea, like, I'm an author. I have a book called Self-Creation, 10 Powerful Principles for Changing Your Life. And it's very helpful to many, many people. And so I think of people who have written plays who have the product in, you know, the script. But how do you go from there to actually connecting with the theater, getting the actors, and having it in front of an audience?
Well, I'm a great proponent of self-producing. That's what I did for the first well, I, the, now, like the first half of my career, and hopefully I will continue to have a career that people will want to produce my works, but I did it myself, and I went, there are, in Chicago particularly, but all over the country, there are small, we call them storefront theaters in Chicago, but there's always a space. All you need is a room and some chairs and some people to invite to put on your own theater. And I think that's the way you get better and better at it, and I think that's the way you make relationships, and that's the way you get exposure. And not only around self-production, but also hooking up with people who are also doing that already, because there are so there are thousands and thousands of small theater companies who are always looking for good work to produce, and so it's just a matter of putting yourself out there and putting yourself out there and getting the rejections and getting the rejections.
Yeah,
and then, you know, and then I think finally the other thing about theater is that it's also knowing that the reward has to be in doing the work, less than being affirmed by a certain level of kind of theater or kind of audience or kind of money, because I think we set ourselves up for nervous breakdowns if somehow the way our career is going is defined by what people think means we're having a good career, because it just doesn't work that way in theater. Every other person, I know so many people who are more talented or as talented as I, who have not necessarily had the planets align for them as nicely. And I think that everything I've achieved, and I have a lot more to achieve, I hope, is, yes, because of my hard work, but also because of things that are so much less tangible, and I've been very lucky. So what matters is you're a playwright if you're writing plays and you're making sure that you get those plays read out loud to people. That's what makes you a playwright, not the Goodman or the Steppenwolf producers your play.
How do you find these theaters, though? And I'm asking for the youngsters out there who may be listening and going, okay, I got that, but where do, is there like a little book that's
yeah,
like, here
no, there is a little book. There are little books. There's TCG puts out a book called the Dramatist Sourcebook, and it used to come out every year, and I think now it's coming out more sporadically, but you should look for something called the Dramatist Sourcebook, which has broken down by the month that they are due and things like that, all kinds of opportunities for submitting scripts, script submission guidelines to theaters around the country, descriptions of those theaters with their websites and their phone numbers and the literary director's names listed, and contests that you enter that, so many contests, so many producing opportunities, 10-minute play workshops, play festivals. You just have to send the work out. You write the work, you make sure it's good, and then you send it out.
You just put it in an envelope and mail it out.
And you mail it. And you expect to get rejections, and the thicker your pile of rejection letters is, the more you can consider yourself a real playwright. I think that's really important to understand. People get discouraged because they say, oh, I got 5 rejection letters. Well, until you've gotten 50, you can't even count yourself as a playwright.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so that, you know, so I think it's a balance. I think, yes, you keep continuing to put your work out there when you have made it the best work you can do. You surround yourself by the kinds of people who have the experience and knowledge to, and but people whom you trust to help you know if the work is good and help you make the work better. And then you have to send the work out. You'll always, your next play will always be better than the last play, but you should always send out the last play too. Don't wait until you've written the great play, because it's not coming. It's always going to be better.
That's wonderful. Are you working on a play right now?
Yeah, always. I'm currently working on another commission for the Steppenwolf's Arts Exchange. That's the same place that The Bluest Eye was produced in. They're actually bringing The Bluest Eye back in October. They're remounting it, which is very exciting. Yeah, that's online right now already for Steppenwolf. So
and
you
when
can
you,
go
when
online
you say and, commissioned, that means that they've asked you to do this for...
When they've commissioned me, it means that they have asked me and they're paying me to write a script. Now, they reserve the right to decide that that script does not suit their needs or is not possibly strong enough or maybe just doesn't fit in thematically with the season they had envisioned. So it doesn't mean it gets done, but it means that you're given the opportunity to write it and they get first dibs on it.
Oh, that's absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, so I'm working on a script for them.
Can you tell us anything about it, or is it a secret?
You know, I don't want to. It's not a secret. It's not a secret because I think anyone will do anything with it. It's a secret because it puts a different kind of unpleasant pressure on me when I start trying to tell you what it will be. So it's better. It examines the life of a woman who was a slave in the early 1900s, and that's all I will say about that.
Well, I know that the life of the woman that you examined for Voyeurs de Venus, which was your play that I saw not 2 days ago, but a week ago, Saturday, it's fantastic.
Thank you. I
was so moved by it. Can you tell us just a tiny bit about what that is about?
Absolutely. There was a woman named Sarchi Bartman, or Sartige, or Sarah, she's often called also Bartman, who in the early 1800s was brought over to Europe from South Africa and displayed in the streets, freak show style. It's just a horribly sad story. The Europeans had never seen the physique of a black woman and were so then taken with it and made her an oddity. And it was a lot about her bottom and her genitalia, and it's a horrific story that's true. And my play vacillates between the telling of that story and the telling of a young African-American woman who's a cultural anthropologist and her struggle in trying to responsibly tell this woman's story, and should she tell this woman's story, and what does it mean to tell this woman's story, and can she do it justice, and all of these concerns. And the play goes back and forth between those two. It's sort of two plays in one.
Oh, it's absolutely excellent. And for those
of you who
are listening, who are in the Chicagoland area, and even if you're not, you can go to chicagotribune.com and look for Nina Metz, M-E-T-Z, write-up on that play. She titled it, her article is called Diamond Turns Venus into a Gem, which is a really clever play on words.
And now you can, while you're online with the Tribune, you can also look for Chris Jones' review of Stick Fly, which also uses those, they really like to use those jewel metaphors.
Yes.
And that one is something about a jewel in the rough, and it's a good review of my play Stick Fly as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful. I'll have to read that because that just came out today, did it?
No, you know, it's only online today. It comes out in the paper tomorrow.
Oh, that's great.
But it's a very, very good review. And then also, Hedy Weiss for the Sun Times wrote a wonderfully flattering review of Voyeur de Venus.
Are there any other final comments that you have for young women who might aspire to this field? What kind of steps could they take to ensure that they have the foundation needed in order to move forward and execute the other strategies you've told us about?
I think schooling is really important. I think reading plays is really important. I think seeing plays is really important. The broader your knowledge about everything in the world, and the more you get to experience theater and get to form your own opinions about different kinds of aesthetics and different ways that it can be done, the more tools you'll be able to pull out of your toolbox as you start to grow into your own voice. I think it's important to be open to what other people say about your work, but not ever to allow that to affect the way you see yourself and your understanding of what you're trying to do in the work. I think it's most important that we figure out how to define ourselves on our own terms and to seek out the people who know how to be supportive and to only minimally listen to the people who might seem to be wanting to tear us down. I think writing is a wonderful way to empower yourself as an artist because no one has to let you be able to write. You can always write. It's harder, you know, with actors. You have to audition and get the role, but you can always write a play. You can always write a poem or a novel or a story. But learn how to write. I think that's really important. Learn how to make the English language your own and learn how to respect all of our various dialects and slangs and be able to use those in our writings, but be able to effortlessly shift between the various styles so that you can do anything you want to do and express anything you want to express.
Thank you so much for being our guest today and for sharing all that very, very fascinating information about your work and what it takes to make it happen.
Well, thank you for your time and your support. That's so needed and so appreciated.
You've been listening to a Jadcast. We hope this podcast helps you on your journey to achievement of your destiny. Remember to visit us at www.jadcommunications.com.